And here we go. Another bonus episode of Pink is the New Podcast by me, Trent Venegas. So as I was thinking about the topics that I was going to talk about in my usual weekly podcast roundup, the one that I just published earlier today, I wasn't sure if I was going to have a topic or something special to do for a bonus episode this week. As it's been so far, my bonus episodes have been little fun extra podcasts that I've done with friends. My friend Sarah was visiting, so I thought it'd be fun for she and I to do a podcast together. Or there was a particular subject that I wanted to talk about at length that would have taken up too much time during my regular weekly podcast. So as I was planning what I was going to talk about for this week, I wasn't quite sure what there was to talk about in a bonus episode until Sunday night. Now, as I mentioned in my earlier podcast, Sunday night I went to a live concert performance called For You, The Music of Prince with Symphony. And as I explained, that concert it's a tour that's going around the country, and it's a live band that plays in major cities. It plays with local symphony orchestras in cities across the country, around the world, actually. And they perform Prince's music with a symphony orchestra. And it was really, really fun. It was a really fantastic show. And that kind of inspired me to get back into, well, see, I always say to get back into like my Prince kick, but it's not like getting back into it. I am always listening to Prince. Honestly, among all of the bands and all of the artists that I listen to all the time, Prince is the one that I probably listen to the most, to be honest. Whether it's on the radio and a Prince song comes on, or, you know, I get an itch to hear a particular song, which leads to a particular album, which leads to a particular era, and then it's 3 weeks of, you know, me playing the same thing over and over and over again. So I tend to do this from time to time. Whenever inspiration strikes. We recently had the anniversary of his passing, and I went to the Princess concert that came to LA around the anniversary of his passing, and that was a nice infusion of Princeness that got me going last month. And now here we are in May, and this For You tour came to town, and it reinvigorated me all over again. And then next month, in honor of Prince's birthday, I'm sure I'm going to go through this all over again. So it brings me to this bonus podcast that I'm going to talk about today. So the For You concert really, you know, they played music from his entire catalog, from his early music all the way up through the hits. And what there was one song that resonated with me that night, and it was their version of Cream from Prince's 1991 album Diamonds and Pearls, which just reminded me how much I love that song and further reinforced how the 90s, particularly the early 90s, is my all-time favorite Prince era. Now, I have, you know, I say this all the time, I've been listening to Prince my whole entire life. So all through the 80s when he was at his Purple Rain heights and just like all over the place. Like it was Prince, Madonna, Michael Jackson. These were like the major, major, major stars. And you have to realize they were big, but they were still up and coming. You know, like they were still releasing their first albums. Although Prince was so prolific, by the time Purple Rain came out, that was like his fifth or sixth album, I think. So, you know, when people think about Prince, honestly, they really think about the Purple Rain era, the When Doves Cry, Little Red Corvette, 1999, like the 80s classic Prince. And I love that era of Prince. I really do. But for me, my favorite era is the 90s Prince, early 90s Prince. You know, I was still young. I was still a kid, but my musical tastes were maturing, and I was able to not only invest in music to buy my own CDs, but I was starting to go to shows. I was starting to pay attention. It wasn't just, I was listening to music on the radio or at someone's house or whatever. It wasn't like it was just a passive thing in my life. It became an active part of who I was and what my day-to-day life was starting to become. So when I started having my own allowance money or paperboy money or whatever, and I started investing in music, Prince was one of the artists that I really gravitated toward because his prolificness meant there was a lot to consume, and in my opinion, his artistry was hitting its peak. So, you know, in the early 90s, that was really early to mid 90s. That was the last time that Prince was still sexy and dirty. You know, like Erotic City was kind of a dirty song, and Darling Nikki, like there were some, you know, dirty Prince songs in the 80s that I got in trouble for listening to, that I think all kids got in trouble for listening to. But it was like in the 90s when he continued his dirtiness and his raunchiness, Sexy Motherfucker and Pussy Control. Like he was, you know, still swearing, still being dirty, still being sexy. And it was the last time that he did that before his religious conversion completely changed his persona. Now, I do contend that Prince wasn't like ruined by his conversion, nor did his art suffer. It just changed. It evolved. He was still just as good. He just wasn't singing about, like, you know, sex and fucking. But as a purist, as a Prince purist, I missed those days. So for me, the early 90s was a really great period of Prince music to enjoy because it was still sexy, dirty, and fun. He gave us massive pop hits, and had it not been for his war with Warner Brothers, his record label, the 90s could have been among his most successful. Now, he did enjoy success in the 90s, but it wasn't anything like he had enjoyed in the 80s because he was publicly arguing and feuding with his record label, writing Slave on his face and just totally being negative about every single thing that had to do with his music career, to the point where he changed his name, where he was saying Prince is dead, and he changed his name to his love symbol, unpronounceable symbol, that it was really hard for A, the record company to promote his music, and B, for the public to kind of digest what was going on and enjoy it. Now, I don't consider myself any kind of special whatever. Like, I was just a kid, like, you know, my early teens, and like, you know, I still wasn't like fully mature, but I kind of understood what was going on, and I still appreciated his music. So thank goodness I was paying attention and was able to enjoy his music at the time, because I would have been so bummed if I, you know, skipped over this whole period and only learned about it after the fact. I was able to enjoy it live as it happened. Now, this was also around the time that, well, okay, so let me get into these first few albums of the 90s of what I really wanted to talk about. So his 1990 album, Graffiti Bridge, kind of kicked off his 90s era, but for me, that's still a remnant of the 80s. In 1989, he released the soundtrack to the Batman movie, and that was such a massive hit. Like, Bat Dance was such a huge hit. Number one smash song attached to a number one album that was attached to the number one, you know, superhero blockbuster movie that changed, like, movie going forever. Like, Batman was the first big superhero blockbuster movie. And to this day, when we see that, like, Avengers Endgame is making billions and billions of dollars, it all started with the craze that Batman started in 1989, and Prince was a part of that. So the Batman soundtrack in 89 and Graffiti Bridge, the soundtrack to his movie Graffiti Bridge, kind of wrapped up 80s era Prince for me. And it was not until 1991's Diamonds and Pearls that the 90s Prince era started for me. It was the first time that he used his band, the New Power Generation, on a record. Now, members of the New Power Generation had been playing with him before. They appear on Graffiti Bridge, but not in the configuration that they do as the New Power Generation. The female vocalist Rosie Gaines, who was a full-fledged member of the New Power Generation, had performed and sang with him before, but it was Diamonds and Pearls, which was the introduction of the New Power Generation, which again signals the start of the 90s era Prince for me. He only worked with Rosie Gaines kind of full time up until 1993, and then she did appear on songs of his and records of his through the 90s, but the New Power Generation, you know, we think about Prince and the Revolution. The Revolution was his first band, and then the New Power Generation was the second big band. But they only were around for two albums. And then, you know, he kind of like did, you know, members broke off, or he let them go, or he reconfigured. But again, New Power Generation to me is signals, you know, the start of 90s Prince era, and it again is like my favorite era of Prince's music catalog. At this time, MTV was still a major thing in pop culture. Like, MTV was still good well into, you know, the early 2000s is when it kind of started falling off. You know, like, TRL was its last really good heyday time, and then when that kind of ended and then reality TV shows took over, MTV totally changed and went away. But in the early 90s, MTV was solidly a massive important thing. It had spent the entire 80s like building up to this behemoth that it became, and in the 90s, in the early 90s particular, it was at its height. So there were Prince videos on MTV all the time. I remember the music videos for Diamonds and Pearls, his big ballad, the music video for Cream, which was like a sexy song that at the time I was like, oh, it's like a fun poppy song. It's like, Cream, get on top. Like, it's this fun poppy song. And it never occurred to me as a kid that it was like this pseudo-sexual kind of dirty song. But Prince is a master of taking you know, quote unquote, sexy, dirty things and popifying them to the point where they're just fun songs. Like Erotic City, you know, We Can Funk Until the Dawn. I mean, like, everybody sings We Can Fuck Until the Dawn. Making Love Till Cherry's Gone. I mean, we know what that means now, but when it's like this poppy song that you're hearing as a kid, you don't know what that is. You're just singing it. So Prince was very good at doing subversive, sexually fun things. And that is part of his sexy appeal, I think. The thing about Diamonds and Pearls, so Prince has had a long history of having like proteges, like especially female proteges. You know, in the 80s, it was like Apollonia, and then Vanity, Sheila E. Like, these were proteges of his that he like nurtured, performed with, and then kind of moved on from. And when Diamonds and Pearls came out, he had these two backup dancers, Diamond and Pearl. And you'll have to forgive me, I don't have their real names handy or off the top of my head, because sadly, these girls were so great. It was such a great idea. It was such a great way to have you know, his little backup dancer proteges, but they only lasted one album. You know, like, a lot of times his proteges tend to last longer than just like one album or just a few videos, but these poor girls, you know, they were really only around for the one album, because Prince ended up meeting his future wife, Maite, and then they went away, and then it became all about Maite. So you know, Diamonds and Pearls is this very special record for me because not only does it represent this, the beginning of a new Prince era, but it was just this fun, version of Prince that was like classic, you know, and fun, and everybody loved that record. You know, the record went multi-platinum. He had number one hits from that record. He went on tour. Now, at this point, I wasn't old enough to go see Prince on tour yet. You know, I was only going to, like, little tiny shows. It wasn't going to be for many years until I would see Prince in concert myself. But this period of time was a huge, huge success for him. And but for me, it wasn't about the success that he enjoyed that appealed to me. It was about the entertainment and the enjoyment that I got from him when I listened. In the early 90s, rap was really taking off, and it was the time before gangster rap kind of blew up. And it was also the time before grunge took off. Like, these things were happening and they were bubbling under the surface, but they hadn't reached mainstream success yet. So, you know, Prince was tapping into this to the rap genre before any other really big major artists were. Now, it would have been very easy for Prince to team up with any of these, you know, up-and-coming, you know, rappers at the time, or established rappers at the time. But he decided to cultivate his own artist, Tony M, and Tony M became like the rapper of the new power generation. So for every song that there was a rap, Tony M was the dude who rapped it. And you know, when I think about the music of that time, I do think about the rap element, but not in a novel way. Like, it was so infused into what Prince was doing, and it kind of was so infused into what pop culture music was at the time that it didn't feel like anything strange to me. It kind of felt like Prince was just right on, fingers on the pulse. He knew what was going on, and that's what he gave us. You know, Diamonds and Pearls, a beautiful ballad, you know, soaring, lush ballad. The music video is very dramatic and beautiful. Cream was just a straight pop hit. And then he did his song Get Off. I think Get Off was the lead single, I want to say, because Get Off was the song that he performed at the MTV Video Music Awards, I believe, in 1991. And he famously wore a yellow, shockingly bright yellow outfit with the butt cheeks cut out. So on stage at the Video Music Awards, Prince performed Get Off in this outfit with his bare ass hanging out. And it was such a thing. Now, I always wonder what these pop culture moments would have been like had they happened in, like, the internet meme generation. Like, the memes alone, I can't even imagine what they would have been like. But in this pre-internet, pre-social media time, it was just something that everybody talked about. Like, Prince and his butt cheeks was hilarious. So, you know, it's these things that you kind of can't appreciate fully unless you witness them live. Like, it kind of sounds silly, and I can imagine how it might sound to people who aren't familiar with the performance of what this whole era was like, but it was Prince's world, and we were just, you know, we were just living in it. The album cover for Diamonds and Pearls had a hologram on it, and it was kind of one of the first things, albums like that, that I had ever seen. I'm certain there were hologram album covers before, but for me, this was the defining hologram moment for me. I remember buying the album, the CD, in a long box, in a cardboard long box, how they used to sell them. Thinking about this time makes me so happy because, you know, when you're young and you're starting to really get an appreciate for music and for art, it really takes a hold of who you are as an adult. And, you know, when people talk about the glory days and the good old days, this is what they talk about. They talk about these moments and these memories that come flooding back with just the sound of one piece of music or a flash of a piece of video or the sight of a holographic album cover. You know, I bought the CD back in the day and I loved it. I still have it. And it wasn't until just in the past 4 or 5 years that I found the album on vinyl. So that was a huge boon for me to find that that album on vinyl. In 92, Prince released his Love Symbol album. So it's the album where it's titled The Symbol that he changed his name to. And it was also the album where he introduced the world to his then girlfriend, future wife, Maite. And the promo for this album was insane. He took over a whole entire episode of the Arsenio Hall Show. And you have to understand, people, the Arsenio Hall Show was like the coolest late night talk show of the time. It was everything all at the same time. It was Wendy Williams and The Tonight Show and Jimmy Fallon and Colbert. And it was all of these shows all at the same time. Prince comes out to open the show, performing his first single from the Symbol album, Love Symbol album, My Name is Prince. And he's wearing this kind of like captain's hat with these chains hanging in front of his face. It was the coolest thing I had ever seen up until that point. Like, man, I'm trying to convey what the feeling was like. And it's hard because I know it's not coming across like it should, but it was just cool. It was just insane. I was obsessed. My Name is Prince was such a hit for me. And then the biggest hit from that Love Symbol album was Seven. Seven was, I think it peaked at number 7 or something like that. It should have been a number 1 hit. I'm sure it hit number 1 in other parts of the world. But it was, you know, a song that everybody knew and loved. It was on the radio. It was on MTV. Massive, massive hit. One of my favorite songs that wasn't a hit at the time was Sexy MF, which is Sexy Motherfucker. And obviously that wasn't going to be a radio hit. And obviously that song wasn't going to play on MTV because, you know, You Sexy Motherfucker is not a song you're going to ever hear on the radio. I mean, maybe some, you know, late night radio, but whatever. It was not a hit. But for those of us who knew, we knew. And to this day, if I go to a Prince party or, you know, a 90s party and that song comes on, people run to the dance floor to dance to that song because it is a banger. It is a slammer. It is one of Prince's best sexy hits that the mainstream doesn't know because it wasn't like a number one radio hit. This was only the second album that the New Power Generation played on as a cohesive whole. And the album was released kind of like a concept album. And the story was like this Egyptian princess, Maite, who was escaping her country and these assassins were trying to kill her. And she had these 3 chains of gold that were the key to some secret, mystical secret or something like that. So she comes to the United States to enlist Prince's help and he helps her escape and they fall in love and live happy ever after. I mean, it's this crazy narrative that this Love Symbol album was the soundtrack to. Carmen Electra, this is the album where Carmen Electra made her debut. She sings on a couple of the songs and then Prince wrote a whole album for her. And I love that record too, by the way. I ate up anything that was Prince related in the 90s. So I know that album front to back. I've been a Carmen Electra fan from the start. You know, people don't really remember or even know that she was a singer in the early 90s. But she was, and it all started with this record. And then, you know, from the Love Symbol album, Prince released this album called Come, which when it came out, to me, felt like an EP. Like, it didn't feel like a cohesive record. But this was around the time that Prince decided that he was going to retire his name and become the Symbol, the artist formerly known as Prince. And what's notable for me about the Come record which is literally all about like orgasms, obviously based on its title. What was notable for me about that album is the cover says Prince, and it has like the date that he was born and 1993. So the inference was Prince is dead. Like this is the end of Prince. And he famously went on to war publicly with his record label over control of his music. And that's a whole other podcast. Like I could do a whole other podcast on just his war with his record label. But what I do want to say about that, really quickly is there's a documentary called Slave Trade, How Prince Changed the Music Industry. I think that's what it's called. It is a 3-hour documentary. It airs on AXS, which is a cable channel. When it airs on cable, it's almost 4 hours long with commercials, but it is the best documentary I have ever seen, probably on Prince ever. But it is the most concise and it is the most educational documentary that explains Prince's, music career and the decisions he made when he decided to cut ties with his record label to try and gain control of his master tapes of his music so that he could do what he wanted with his music. I will say that while his war with Warner Brothers probably did irreparable damage to his career, he would have been even bigger than he was and became had it not been for that feud, I argue. But good things did come from that era. Great music came from that era. He became the first artist ever to sell music on the internet. Now this is pre-downloads. Like he did that too with his NPG Music Club. Like he did that later in the 90s where he was selling downloads, the first artist to do that as well, predating Napster, predating iTunes. But he established a website, 1-800-NEW-FUNK, which was also a phone line where you could order things from him directly. And he sold his single, The Most Beautiful Girl in the World, in 1994, and it was the first song that you could buy on the internet. That song became a number one song and proved to himself and to many people in industry that he didn't need a record label to be successful. Now, one number one song and one hit single does not a massive success make, but for someone like Prince, it was proof that he knew what he was doing and he was, he had the future sight to see what was coming. So, after the release of The Most Beautiful Girl in the World, he still had to play nice with Warner Brothers to release music because he was really trying to get out of his contract. At this point, he was writing Slave on his face and he was doing the bare minimum to just release music, make Warner's happy, satisfy his contract, and get out of his contract to do what he wanted. With very mixed results. In the midst of all of this, in 1996, he released The Gold Experience, which, in my opinion, is a perfect record. I argue that his song Gold is just as good as Purple Rain, and I argue that The Gold Experience is one of his best records of all time. And you know, I don't say that lightly. He has lots of great records and other, you know, hit songs that are bigger, that more people know, but just because the public doesn't know about this record like they should, doesn't mean that the art is any less valid. I consider it a masterpiece. His song P Control is one of his greatest songs. 319 is one of my favorite of his sexy songs. And that song, 319, it's kind of, you know, it's a little sexy. There's some dirty lyrics in it. It's not too bad, but it's like, it's still a sex. It's clearly, you know what he's talking about when he's talking about, like, you know, what he and this woman are doing in this hotel room where he's taking pictures of her. That song marks the end of an era for me because it's the end of Prince being sexy Prince. From that point on, he had a religious conversion and he changed his whole musical persona. Again, that's a story for another day. Interactive, also one of my favorite Prince songs that a lot of people don't know, because, yes, it appears on the Gold Experience, but it first debuted on a CD-ROM. Prince released a CD-ROM, I believe in 93, 94, around there, called Interactive. And it was kind of like a video game where you are navigating through Prince's Paisley Park studio home, and you're clicking on things and you're opening secret doors. And if you figure out the puzzles, you get to hear a piece of music, or you get to see, music videos or performance videos. It was so cool. Like, no artist had been doing this at that time. Madonna had it, Michael Jackson had it. You know, Interactive for me was just like, wow. It was the melding of one of my favorite artists with new technology. You know, I had my first computer around that time, and you know, CD-ROMs were like everything. So if you played the game and you won it, you got to see the music video or the live performance of Interactive. But if you put the CD-ROM in your CD player, track two would be a song, and the song was Interactive. And for me, that is the quintessential version of that song. So I had been a fan of that song since it came out on the CD-ROM, but then in 96, when it came out on the Gold Experience, it finally found a home amongst the other songs that were written at the time: Endorphin Machine, Dolphin, We March. That record is so good. Another great thing about that record was Prince was giving us a little bit of an online internet experience with the Gold Experience, because in between the songs there are segues from the NPG operator, and it's a female computer voice, kind of like Siri or kind of like Alexa, where you hear tapping on a keyboard and she's saying, "Welcome to the Dawn. You have just accessed the Beautiful Experience. This experience will cover," and it was like you were navigating through a computer system or navigating the internet, and this computer guide was guiding you along the way based on the decisions that you made. I mean, this sounds so simplistic as I'm explaining it now in the internet age, but it was really revolutionary at the time. Like, you know, most people didn't have the internet, or if you had it, you kind of didn't know what it was going to be. You know, it was like AOL, and it was like, Angel Fire or GeoCities web pages with like dancing baby GIFs. Like, it was, the internet was such an innocent, unformed thing at that time. But Prince had the foresight to see what was coming, and the Gold Experience is a beautiful soundtrack for what he saw the internet age would become. Now, you know, I could go on and on and on, but these three records were the records that I've been listening to over the past couple days, ever since Sunday night, and they just inspired me to want to talk about them in this little bonus podcast. I can see how I could take any one of these records or any one of these topics and talk for another 30 minutes, 40 minutes, 60 minutes. But for this bonus podcast, I kind of want to just do a little love letter to early 90s Prince, these three records, these memories that have been like swirling in my head, thinking about hanging out with my really, really good friend, Sherry. She and I went to high school together, and we hung out a lot during this time. She is very well aware of my Prince obsession, and she kind of got, you know, dragged into this Prince obsession with me, because it was just something that was part of my everyday life. I've seen Prince in concert with her, and I've seen Prince in concert with a lot of people, because I've gone to see him many, many times. So even though it wasn't until 1997 that I saw my first Prince concert. I've seen him many, many, many times, including 16 out of the 21 concerts that he did in LA in 2011. Yeah, it was about 2011, I believe, when he did his 21 nights in Los Angeles. But again, I'm getting off topic. Let me go back to the early 90s and just say, that is an era of Prince that if you are not familiar with, you need to. You know, those three records, Diamonds and Pearls, the Love Symbol album, and the Gold Experience, make up for me a time in Prince's career that will resonate with me and make me happy all at the same time for the rest of my life. One more thing about that era, he released his Hits, Prince the Hits 3 CD album, and on that record were two CDs of hit songs and one CD of B-sides. And on each of the Hits discs, there's one new track. So, Pink Cashmere and Peach, those were two new songs that were included on Prince the Hits. And while that record is predominantly all 80s hits, because they're all, it's a greatest hits record, those two songs, Pink Cashmere and Peach, also stand to me as, early 90s Prince songs that feel a part of that era. So, if you are not familiar, or if you're not aware of this era in Prince music, and you are at all interested, I highly recommend. All of these records are on Spotify. They can be purchased on iTunes, streamed on Tidal. You know, you can find the CD use CD shops, or these records are being reissued on vinyl. So please seek these out. Listen to early 90s Prince and see what you think. If you are not aware of this era and you check them out, please hit me back and tell me what you think. I want to hear what you think if you are a new fan of this era of Prince music. If you are an old school Prince fan and you remember fondly this era of Prince, I want you to hit me back as well and tell me about your memories. Tell me what you remember. Do you remember that MTV Video Music Awards performance where Prince had his ass cheeks out? Let's talk about it. Did you order things from 1-800-NEW-FUNK and wait patiently as those things were delivered to your house? I did. Let's see. What did I buy? I would buy CDs from 1-800-NEW-FUNK. I bought the Crystal Ball box set from 1-800-NEW-FUNK. I bought the Love Symbol little necklace on a chain from 1-800-NEW-FUNK. And I still have these things. I still have all of these things. All right, I'm rambling now, I can tell it. I'm gonna go and listen to these records all over again, because talking about them makes me want to hear them again. And I hope that you'll join me in celebrating early 90s Prince, sexy Prince, funky Prince, rapping Prince, R&B Prince, pop Prince, the greatest Prince. So yeah, all right, I'm signing off. Go listen, enjoy, love. May you live to see the dawn. Peace and be wild.